Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Hey everybody, it's Nikki Nellis, and we are live in the gorgeous Line Hotel. This is Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast, but once again, I am beastless. I usually have a co-host who is my husband, who once in a while like decides to show up and thinks he's like doing something really special for the show, but in truth, the show is all about me, or it should be my show. But anyway, we'll keep that our little secret. So I want to thank you all for joining me today. So Industry Night is a very deep dive on something that is going on in the district. Now, normally we have a food, wine, or travel focus, but because it's my show and I get to do whatever I want, I like to bring in things that are going on in the city that have value and importance to me. So it's really... interesting. There's a huge pride parade that is coming up this year in June here in D.C. It happens every year. I went to my very first Capitol Pride Parade when I was 16 years old here in D.C. I am an incredible ally for the LGBTQ community. I sit on the Committee for Chefs for Equality, which is a huge event, the food event of the season, I might add, coming up in October, where almost every chef in the DC community comes together and raises funds for the human rights campaign. And every year for the last, this is the third year now, DC Brown, the Washington Blade, commemorate or participate in the Pride parade by creating a really fabulous label. And all the funds raised by selling that beer with that label. This year it's called, Brandon, what's it called?
Pride Pills.
Yes, your Pride Pills. Your Pride Pills, every year all that money goes to two organizations.
That's correct.
So I'm so excited because I have all these people in studio with me today, and it's really kind of getting warm in here because there's so many people in here. But what we're going to be talking about is the 50th anniversary of Stonewall Uprising. We're going to be talking about the 50th anniversary of the Blade. We are going to be talking about the Pilsner Pride and the fabulous artist who made it happen and one of the organizations that is receiving the funds from it. So I wish we had like a in-studio audience so we could get some applause here. So I want to introduce, oh, thank you, Mel Gold in the background. So we have Brandon Skull from DC Brow. You've been on air before.
I have. I've been on Foodie and the Beast a couple times.
A couple times.
Always a great time.
Absolutely. But not on this show.
I haven't been on the show before.
Oh, my God.
I do love the digs here, though.
I know, right?
Really nice studio, yeah.
It's pretty. You've been on Beer Me, right?
I have.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Okay, fine. Go on her show. Don't come on my show. I mean, seriously. Anyway. And then we also have Stephen Ruckers from the Washington Blade, Maggie Doherty, who is a graphic artist, who won and did a gorgeous, gorgeous label. I can't wait to discuss that in a little bit. And I'm hoping I say this right, Sultan. Okay.
That's it. Yep.
Sultan Shaker. He's the executive director of Smile.
That's
which
correct.
Is supporting and mentoring youth advocates and leaders.
You got it.
Okay, 35th anniversary. It's so exciting. And also in studio, with us today is Christy Wallover, and she is with the museum. Mm-hmm. So, Christy, tell us a little bit about what you do at the museum.
Sure. So I'm the exhibit writer at the museum, which mm-hmm. basically means that all the exhibits, the words that you see on the wall, is from me. Like, I research that material.
Like a lot, because there is a ton of words at the museum.
Are very verbose. This is true.
Right. So what was your involvement with the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising exhibit?
Right. So I was actually brought on to research and write that exhibit. I came mm-hmm. on board in the museum in 2017. From that point, we knew we wanted to do a 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots that happened in June, late June. Mm-hmm. So basically, they brought me on to kind of research what happened, create like a concept of what our overview and the organization for our exhibit, and then write it. So that process took about like a year and a half.
So for people who don't mm-hmm. know about the Stonewall
right.
Uprising. Can you give us a little history here?
Yeah, sure. So the Stonewall Uprising occurred June 28th, 1969 in Greenwich Village, New York City mm-hmm. at the Stonewall Inn, which was a big gay bar owned and operated by the mafia. So, you know, a lot of what happened with bars in New York like this.
I feel like everybody at the same time should have been like, what? Oh, by yeah, the mafia?
Like record screech?
Right, exactly.
yeah, common occurrence for that kind of bar because there are outlaws. So, you know, you're not going to have a legit investor. You're going to usually have a mafiosa person who mm-hmm. just wants to get money and drain, you know, patrons and basically blackmail them.
Right.
So what happened was is that the Stonewall was one of those bars.
But correct me if I'm wrong, yeah. with the Stonewall, mm-hmm. it originally was for men only,
correct.
Right? It was a men-only bar.
It was, but by the time the riots happened, like, women were in
coming,
there.
Right,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So basically what happened is that this bar always gets raided. It was raided previously in that week leading up to the Stonewall riots. Mm-hmm. And to give you kind of like an element of what was going on that night, it was a sweltering hot June night. People just wanted to party and relax. It was a full moon and the alcohol was flowing. And basically when police came in to, you know, tear up the bar mm-hmm. And boot the patrons out, they were pissed. So, you know, after a little bit of campy fun where people paraded out to just kind of applause and, you know, put a spin of humor on this horrible thing that was happening to them because it was basically police harassment. Mm-hmm. A lesbian or a transgender man, we're not quite sure which one it was, or how that person identified, was basically like, what are you doing? These people are roughing us up. Like, this isn't fair. This is discrimination. And she got the crowd to kind of, like, fight back in a way. So at first there were, like, hisses and, like, boos. And then they were, like, throwing pennies and then throwing bottles. And then, you know, it basically turned into a riot at that point with, like, trash cans and fire and violence. So over the course of 5 days, the riots played out. Some days were peaceful. Mm-hmm. Some days were violent. And it basically ended, you know, 5 days later with, like, an hour of intense violence between police and protesters.
And were the protesters all from the gay community at that time, or were allies coming in? What did it look like?
Right. So the first night, it was people who were patrons of the bar. Like, a lot of street youth actually fought back. They were basically the front men on the lines. They, you know, were the ones taking the punches and, you know, just beating police and trying to get away and mm-hmm. trying to fight back at the same time. Later on in the days coming, a lot of people from different circles would show up, different liberal movements, different movements from counterculture. So at one point, it was more of that crowd than the actual LGBTQ community, but mm-hmm. they were still a large force during those few days of riots.
And then what was the end result?
It galvanized the community for sure. Like, mm-hmm. no longer could this, you know, community just be ignored or society turn its back on them. Like, they were out in the spotlight. They were not going back in the closet, and they were going to fight for their rights for sure.
And what was the press coverage at that time?
So, fascinatingly, real sparse. You know, you think with such violence going over the course of a few days that it would get some major play, but it actually didn't. Mm-hmm. Only a couple of mainstream papers picked it up, and a lot of it was still, like, really derogatory writing towards that community. Mm-hmm. Alt papers and papers of the LGBTQ press covered it more in depth. Later on, when mainstream news saw that, you know, this community wasn't going away and protests were continuing, that's when they really started to shed, like, a spotlight on issues surrounding
it. But when the mainstream press started looking at it, were mm-hmm. they taking it seriously, or were they treating it as fodder, or do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
with humor, like, what were they respectful of it, or were they treating it in a discriminatory sort of way?
Basically the latter.
Okay.
So really awful headlines. Like, we have this one newspaper headline that was like, hornet's nest raided, queen bee stinging mad, like mm-hmm. that kind of headline, which was really derogatory and made
sure.
fun of, like, this horrible thing that happened to people.
Mm-hmm.
But as time wore on, you know, the headlines were still not very helpful or nice to this community, but they were taken a little bit more seriously.
And how does the museum showcase this happening? How does it celebrate the 50-year anniversary of it?
It's basically, highlighting that this movement was done by everyday people, people who use their First Amendment right to make change in a society where they saw inequalities. So, you know, we focus on people like Marsha P. Johnson and Frank Kameny, Barbara Giddings, Edith Windsor and Jim Obergefell, just people who, you know, this affected their everyday life and they saw that it was not justified. So they took it in their own hands to either petition the government, protest, and do what they had to.
And what has the reaction from people coming into the museum been to the exhibit?
Awesomely positive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I had a few people come up to me when I hang out in the gallery, just come and say like, oh my God, like, my story is on these walls, like my heritage is finally talked about, like I didn't learn this in school, but it's so cool that I'm learning it now. Like, it's been very awesome to see that.
That's
for sure.
Very yeah. exciting. And you, the museum worked with The Blade, right?
Yes.
To, okay, now you're gonna have to move that mic. You can move the mic. There
Perfect.
You go. There. So how did The Blade and the museum work together on this project?
Yeah, so our relationship with the museum actually started with our 45th anniversary 5 years ago, where we donated a very first issue of The Blade and a couple other historical issues to the museum, so they would have those on file. And then they approached us this year. Mm-hmm. They interviewed one of our local reporters, Lou Chabarro, who has been at The Blade since the 70s.
Okay.
And originally had to report under a pseudonym because it wasn't safe for him to report under his real name back then. And there are a few copies of the paper in the exhibit.
Yeah, absolutely. The Washington Blade was instrumental. It's one of the first newspapers of the LGBTQ press in America.
Mm-hmm.
Newspapers and LGBTQ press in general really were one of the forebearers of bringing this movement together, because newspapers were used as, you know, a way to get information across, a way to organize, and then eventually mobilize. So, you know, getting that story of the Washington Blade was really important to us.
Well, Stephen, can you tell us a little bit about the history of the Washington Blade?
Yeah. So the Blade was founded on October 6, 1969, in the aftermath of the Stonewall Riots, and was basically a one-cheater paper that came out monthly for the community here in D.C.
Who created it? Who ran it?
There's been hundreds of people over the years that have sort of ran The Blade. But like I said, a lot of the people back then were publishing under fake names and pseudonames and everything. So we probably don't even know exactly who was involved at the beginning. But it turned into was a monthly paper, then a bi-weekly paper, and now we're a weekly paper. And it's the oldest print newspaper for the LGBT community in the country.
And it's only in D.C.?
Yeah, so we print here in D.C. Our website is read around the world because we are the only and the first LGBT publication to be in the White House press pool. So our White House reporter is there every day.
Isn't that as it should be, right?
And then we also do have the Los Angeles Blade, which is about 2 years old.
Okay. So for people maybe who have never picked up The Blade and aren't familiar with its content, what is it that's so different from the city paper or another paper? What is it about The Blade and the kind of content that's in there that speaks to the LGBTQ community?
Yeah, I mean, I think the paper...
Can we change it? It's so long. LGBTQI, every day. Like, we need to be able to, like, make it, like, smile, right? So that, because sometimes I trip over my tongue.
Yeah, and I would say The Blade it's not just read by the LGBT community. Every story that we have is from the perspective of the community, and that's why it's important. So, I mean, any of our political news or anything that we're covering locally has some sort of LGBT spin or coverage to it. So I think that's what sets us apart from, you say, City Paper or even the Washington Post, per se. Just because they're going to cover mainstream issues, but we're not necessarily going to cover that the stock market crashed today. But if there's something specific to the community, like the Equality Act that's being voted upon on the Hill, that's sort of where our focus is.
And what made you guys decide to open up in L.A.?
LA did not have a weekly print publication.
Interesting. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and being the second largest media market in the country, we felt that there was a need. And so now we have full-time staff out there, and it's amazing the response to see, because that community didn't have a weekly sort of print newspaper.
And is the content here from D.C. specific to D.C.? I mean, it must have a national, because it's D.C., a national bent. I mean, I read The Blade, so I know what's in it, but you know what I mean. But is L.A. more specific to L.A.? Do you share stories?
We do share stories. Okay. They take a lot of our political content, and we actually take a lot of their entertainment content.
Right, why not?
Yeah, and they have great, I mean, just like we can call up and get an interview with anyone on the Hill, they can pick up the phone and basically get an interview with any entertainer star. Or star out there.
Very cool. Now, how did The Blade hook up with DC Brow?
So it originally started with, I believe, our Best of Gay DC Awards, which are normally in October, and DC Brow won Best Brewery. And I formed a relationship with them, and they had donated beer to a couple of our events. And then a few years ago, I went to them and said, hey, it would be awesome if we could do a special label for Pride. What do you think? And after a little back and forth, especially figuring out how to produce the can and the label, they said, let's do it. And so we opened up the competition to the public to design the can. And then we narrow it down, and then we put it on the Blade's website and let the public vote to see who should win.
That's so much fun. Do a lot of people participate?
Yeah. I mean, we get over 10,000 votes a year on the can, so it's super exciting.
That's amazing. And this year you had over 10 people submit artwork? Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. Brandon? It's a really cool story, because when Stephen originally came to us, it was prior to the recent expansion we've gone through at the brewery. We went through an expansion just about 3 years ago. And we were absolutely at capacity, and we really wanted to do this project the first year he came, but we just didn't have any space to brew it. So as soon as we finished our expansion and the idea came up again, we said, yeah, I think we can do this year. And that would have been the first can 3 years ago, and that was really cool, because I remember, you know, we were all sort of formulating, we had a meeting there at the brewery and our conference room, and we're sort of formulating how to lay this whole project out, you know, getting involvement from the community, both in the form of artists and also people voting on it online on the Blade website. And it was a really fun process to plan, and also really great to see that whole plan come to life, because it almost came together flawlessly. Like, when putting together
nothing
a project
ever
like
comes
this,
together flawlessly.
Well, you know, it really seems like we're waiting for, like, where down the road are we gonna, you know, where are we gonna take this stumble? Where is there gonna be this big chaotic thing? But it never happened. And a lot of that was due to the work that the Blade put in, making sure that the contest was handled flawlessly. You know, we were able to use the Blade's platform online to host the contest, get all the designs up, and everything just came together really, really well. And a lot of that was, you know, as a result of the efforts that the Blade put into this whole project. And
so did Blade come up with the idea? So what were the, let's talk about the two past years.
Yeah.
And who they focused on, and then we can get into this year's.
Absolutely.
We have the two cans from last year.
Yes. Well, this is the first year's can right here.
Okay, right here.
And I actually, it's really cool how this contest and the content of the cans has progressed, because the first year is very celebratory and just very fun. And
it has a unicorn on it.
It does. And I feel like
these should be in the exhibit.
Yeah, great addition.
Well,
right?
And I feel like Pride is very celebratory, which is really cool. But it's also about overcoming adversity. It's also about a struggle and a fight. And, you know, the concept with the second year can really got a little political, and, you know, it started to become
more serious. What year is this?
That's year one.
I know, but what's the date?
That would be 2017.
So it's 2017. Okay.
And then 2018 right here, you can see we've all got characters sort of, you know, casting their faces downward with these, you know, symbols of America in their sunglasses. And it's sort of like, it's a bit of a protest can, you know, it's a bit of saying, like, how about us? You know, like, we're getting lost out here. And then this year, the concept behind the can and the way the art came together was just perfect. You know, when we are planning these contests every year, it's well before the theme for Pride is announced.
Right.
So, you know, the first year, I don't think there really was a theme. It was just sort of, let's see what happens. And then this year, you know, with Stonewall, that really became the theme. And it was really great to see what the artist came up with in order to celebrate, discuss, and commemorate that.
Yes, go ahead.
And I'd also add, I think the Kant's progression is also sort of the current political climate.
I mean, well, that's why I was asking exactly what year.
Yeah, so
things
I mean,
have changed so dramatically.
The unicorn can was when we had Obama, and we were having...
No, it's not, though.
But it was before
The design was before the election?
Yeah.
I mean, that's when everything changed.
Yeah. And then last year is sort of...
Right.
A lot of the designs were resist and
Who
this
can
and
resist,
that.
Right.
And then this year is all about sort of the history and the history of the blade and the history of Stonewall with Marsha and sort of her
impact.
Well,
so who decided on Marsha P. Johnson? Oh, yes. Okay, well, so wait, before you speak. So the winner of DC Prow is Maggie Dougherty.
Dougherty.
Yeah. So is it spelled D-O-U-G-H?
Yeah, it's a Philly pronunciation. It's Dougherty.
Hey, but everyone here in Philly. I don't think that's true, but okay, so Dougherty. Okay, so my apologies.
Oh, no problem. Everyone here says Dougherty, so I usually let it
just go with it. Yeah. No, but when you're on air, you absolutely
exactly,
should
yeah.
not. Okay, so... Where'd you get your idea? You were the winner.
I was, and I'm super excited about this. I've been following the contest for the last, 2 years.
Is this
years.
Your first submission?
This is my first submission, okay. But I've drafted something I was saying earlier every year, and I just didn't feel like it really did what I wanted to mm-hmm. do, so I actually hadn't submitted. Mm-hmm. So this year, I was really excited when I saw the theme was Stonewall, and I actually didn't know much about Stonewall, so I had to go and do research
on
my own.
Did you go to the museum?
I didn't, but I clearly should have. But I'm going to. So I was looking into it and trying to figure out a way to show something that was striking and beautiful, because I think the last two cans have really captured that, like, energy of Pride. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to capture that energy, but also do something that told a story that was powerful and connected to Stonewall. And so I was doing my research, reading, kind of going down the rabbit hole of Google, and came across...
Which is, by the way, really easy.
It's so easy. So
there's a lot of rabbit holes out there.
Exactly. And I came mm-hmm. across an article on Medium. It was called, let me make sure I get the title right, You Can't Have Pride Without Marsha P. Johnson. And it was mm-hmm. by Ishmael Bishop. And mm-hmm. that article I thought was really powerful for me. So I started to read more about Marsha and then do some image searching on her. And the image that popped up first is the one that the can is based on. Mm-hmm. And if you look up Marsha, you'll see a picture that's pretty much exactly like this, just the core part of it.
Right.
And, the smile on her face, just she exuded this, presence and aura. And mm-hmm. honestly, she actually, her fashion sense reminded me of my grandmother. So I felt like a connection there. I was like, oh, my grandmother and her would be like best friends.
Right.
So reading about her and see, learning her story, she was this incredibly... resilient, incredibly powerful and interesting person. She was an advocate. She was a revolutionary. She fought for others. But at the same time, she was marginalized. And mm-hmm. she, even though she was this leader and she's credited with doing so much, she, was consistently homeless. She didn't get the help she needed for, mental health that she was struggling with. And when she died suspiciously, her death wasn't given the level of interest it should have been from mm-hmm. the police and those investigating it. And it was kind of, pushed aside. So for me, I think she represented a part of Pride that I actually didn't know too much about before mm-hmm. researching it. And a part that I think is still... people still face the same issues today that Marsha faced. And so knowing that and knowing, we've come so far and I think it's
not far enough, nearly.
And
so,
I think Marsha represents that.
You mentioned earlier that mm-hmm. Marsha P. Johnson is featured in the exhibit. Can
yes.
you tell us what you know about her so we can share her story even more? Yeah.
So she's actually a veteran of Stonewall. She was there during the fighting. There's this awesome story of her talk about doing something backwards in heels. She picked up bricks off the side of the sidewalk, threw them in her bag, shimmied up a light pole, and then chucked them at police cars as they were trying to take people out. So, I mean, like, talk about a feisty, spirited mm-hmm. person who, believed in justice for sure. But in 1970, not long after the riots, she started STAR, which mm-hmm. is Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries, which she and Sylvia Rivera, another transgender women started basically taking kids off the street that needed help and mm-hmm. giving them a place to live.
Well, because even food, still today, trans youth has a tremendous homelessness
absolutely,
problem.
Absolutely, yeah. So basically minority transgender youth are highly victimized, mm-hmm. horrible crimes happening against them, violent crimes, something like in a 2017 FBI statistic we have in the exhibit says that they're even more victimized than anti-Semitic hate crimes. Mm-hmm. So it's terrible still. And, you know, there's still work to be done.
Well, I think this is such an incredible way to get her story out there. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the terrific foundations that are going to be receiving the funds. So far, $23,000 raised and more coming,
Woo-hoo!
Right? So this is Nikki Nellis. It's Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast, currently no Beast, in the Fabulous Line Hotel. We'll be back in just a sec.
The track you're listening to during the break is by Kiedo. That's K-I-E-D-O. For more information, visit fullserviceradio.org. We'll be right back.
It's Nikki Nellis, Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast. I'm here in the Gorgeous Line Hotel. Now, you may hear me on other radio shows and actually other radio. I am a regular on WTOP radio talking about the food and wine scene in D.C. I'm also on air live every Sunday with my husband, David, on Foodie and the Beast, the D.C.'s only food and wine radio show that's been on for over 10 years. And if you're looking for all the who, what, where, why, and when in the D.C. food and wine scene, absolutely go to the list. Areyouonit.com. You'll find every food and wine event happening in the DC metro area listed there. And lastly, you should just follow me, but don't tell my husband, at Nikki Nellis, NYCCINELLIS. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, although nobody's using Facebook anymore. So look at me at Instagram and Twitter. So, Brandon and Steven, you guys have been raising money, but how do you decide where this money goes? Who makes that decision?
So when we originally created the can, we had this discussion of where do we want to put the money. We decided to put part of it towards the Blade Foundation, mm-hmm. Which is our 501c3 arm of the Washington Blade. Mm-hmm. And then DC Brow has worked with Smile in the past, and so mm-hmm. they suggested the other portion go to Smile.
Okay, well, dun, 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 dun. I know you've been sitting here the whole show. You've been so great.
I have.
So, yeah, you have. Right. You're like, I've been
loving
terrific.
It. Loving it.
Okay, so Sultan Shakir.
That's right.
Oh, my God. I can't believe I got that name right. I get very nervous when I'm unsure of somebody's names, and I inevitably screw it up. So I'm so thrilled that I did that right. So tell us about your organization.
Sure. So Smile was founded 35 years ago when the city was actually institutionalizing queer youth for being too whatever. Young men were not masculine enough. Women, young women were not feminine enough. And so they'd actually institutionalize them in St. Elizabeth's.
Oh, my God.
And so the community came together and said, we just need a safe space for young people to be who they are. And
were these people who were getting kicked out of their homes? They were homeless?
It was a range.
Happening? Okay.
It was the city's quote-unquote solution to solving the challenge that these young people were having,
mm-hmm.
even though they weren't having a challenge. The
right.
only challenge was they weren't being accepted for who
they
are.
Were. Right. Mm-hmm.
And so that 35 years ago was the founding of Smile.
Okay. And so how did it progress? I mean, 35 years later,
yeah.
what is your mission now? How do you work with youth? What are the programs you have in place?
Sure. So the way the evolution of the organization looks is as the adult LGBT community really started to take more of an activist focus,
mm-hmm.
young people started to say, we really want to be at the forefront of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we still have the similar drop-in style programs, but a lot of our programs really look at how can we help young people ask the question, what are the challenges that they're facing, but then also be the ones who create the solutions and implement those solutions.
Okay. So... But if you're a homeless child
mm-hmm.
who doesn't know where to turn, how do they find you? And then how do you help them and help
sure.
them help themselves?
So one of the programs that we operate is the housing program for homeless youth. And what
okay.
that program does is it brings youth in for up to 2 years. And so they'll live with us. We provide them money for food, money for transportation. But it really from day one says, where are you today and where do you want to be in 2 years? And how
mm-hmm.
can we help you get there? And
mm-hmm.
so it's a lot about job training, a lot about mental health counseling.
What's our random age? What's our age range for this?
So it goes up to 24 in this program.
Okay, and what's the youngest?
18.
So 18 mm-hmm. to 24.
Yep.
Okay.
In the housing program.
Right. Okay. So you have housing,
mm-hmm.
and this whole program.
Yep.
And then how do you help, like, who do you bring in? How do you help them with all this?
So the youth come from a number of different places. We've had youth who were actually asylum seekers from other countries
mm-hmm.
who ended up needing to come to the U.S. because they were being harassed in their home country. They ended up homeless and then found out about the program that we have.
How big is your program?
So right now we have housing for 12 youth.
Okay, so
yeah.
that's not a lot.
It's not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it
and are you looking to grow that?
We are.
Okay, and what
yes.
does that entail other than money?
So it entails, it's a significant amount of money because
mm-hmm.
we really want to make sure that we have the staffing in place who
mm-hmm.
can help support the young people and really help meet their needs. Because it's not a shelter. Just operating
no,
an
it doesn't
overnight
sound
shelter
like
is great,
a shelter.
But
right.
that's not what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really want to make sure that if a young person comes in to stay with us and enters the housing program, that they really have the support that they need to become self-sufficient.
So is it only the housing program or do you have outside the house programs as well?
So the housing program is actually one of our newest programs.
Oh,
we started
okay.
that in 2017.
Wow. And then, so let's talk about some of your other programs.
Sure.
Okay, great.
So one of our other really big programs is our Gender and Sexuality Alliance program. A lot of people have heard about gay-straight alliances or GSAs, but young people have really tried to reframe it to Gender and Sexuality Alliance to be more inclusive. And so what that does is works in schools to help young people make schools safer for queer youth.
Mm-hmm.
Because we still see young people being bullied more often if they're queer. And turning to things like drugs and alcohol, if they're struggling with their sexual orientation
mm-hmm.
or gender identity, it's not being affirmed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go into young schools and we're going to schools and really try to make them safe and affirming places for young
but
people.
But how do you do that? Are you working with the kids themselves? Do you work with the administration? I mean, some areas are more involved than others. You know, there are some regions, you know, in the DC metro area that are like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, bring it on. Let's get the conversation started. Let's make it happen. And then you have others who have their heads in the sand. So
right.
how do you partner with both? And how do you get in front of really the young people who need to understand the other how others are living, so that, you know, not everybody lives the same way, and sharing their stories.
Yeah, so we'll start with the jurisdictions that are really supportive, like D.C. D.C. Mm-hmm. public school system is fantastic in terms of policies. Mm-hmm. The challenge is implementation. And so even though we have a lot of rules in place where gender expression needs to be affirmed, the question is, how does that play out on a day-to-day basis, particularly when you have a new teacher who doesn't know what to say when a young person one day presents as a young male and the next day wants to present as a young female. So mm-hmm. even if someone is supportive, sometimes there are questions about language, questions about terminology, questions about how to engage other students and other parents. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we try to work with as many partners in the young person's education as possible. We train young people to do trainings for their peers on what it means to be trans, what it means to be gender nonconforming.
I have to be honest. I mean, as an ally, mm-hmm. obviously I have received an education, but not everybody has.
Right.
And I do think that it's so important in the schools for everybody to understand what each individual is going through, so that there is this level of understanding. Because I think even the most understanding person, if they don't, I'm using the word understanding too much, but what I'm trying to say is that even if you're not aware, mm-hmm. sometimes it's hard to understand it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So it needs to be explained, and everybody sometimes I feel like is just supposed to get it.
Right.
Right? And understanding what it means to that person, and it's different for everybody. Like, this is not a black or white issue. There are so many shades of gray here. So making everybody feel comfortable is such a priority, but there has to be room for a dialogue.
Right.
So you don't feel offended if I say something that you find offensive. Not because I'm not trying to be offensive, but just because I don't know you find that offensive. Does that make sense?
It does. And that actually goes into a shift that the community has started to have. Like, we used to talk about safe spaces all the time, and we mm-hmm. want to create safe spaces. Now we talk about brave spaces, because we really need everyone to show up and be brave in this conversation. It's not easy. Terms are changing. The way we interact with each other changes. Like, the fact that right now a lot of young people prefer to start with asking pronouns, just so there are no assumptions about how somebody wants to be gendered or not gendered. Mm-hmm. And so we do need people to be open to the fact that young people change every year. And so if we're adults who are trying to be allies of young people, particularly young queer people, we need to change as well.
Right. No, that's an excellent piece of advice. I think for older generations, that concept is a little harder to understand. You know, it's blue or pink.
Yeah.
And trying to understand, and pronouns are also difficult, just because of English. They, mm-hmm. you know, figuring out how to use that terminology. And I think that's an education process.
Right. And understanding that it's new for people.
Right, exactly. No, and I appreciate all that. So those are the things you're doing in schools?
It is, yeah.
And are you only in D.C. at the moment?
So we're in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia.
Interesting. And so how do you execute those programs? Are you doing assemblies? Do you do clubs? How does it work?
So we really try to, one, work with the youth who are interested in leading this effort in schools, and mm-hmm. then from there branch out to working with the teachers and the administrators, because mm-hmm. it can look different for every school.
Sure.
And it really depends on the challenge that the school's struggling with. We mm-hmm. work with one school where they actually keep the youth overnight. The youth come in Monday and then they leave Friday, and they have different challenges because the youth are living together. Mm. Whereas there may be a school where their big challenge is how to create a gender-neutral restroom. When they don't have the money to re-outfit the entire building, where do they put that restroom so a youth doesn't have to run from the first floor to the fifth floor back down to the first floor? And so a lot of it is really trying to work out the specific challenges that a school is having. And for us, as long as the school is interested in moving forward and becoming
affirming
and accepting.
You already have a foot in.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So when you guys, the Blade and DC Brow, got together, who found this organization?
So we've worked with Smile in the past.
Okay.
Mari Rodella, who is our community and cultural officer, mm-hmm. She works with a lot of our nonprofit partners. So we were familiar with Smile and very moved by and impressed with the work that Smile does.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a natural partner for us to have for the project.
Okay.
When we were contemplating the project, the number one thing was that we didn't want this, you know, making a beer that's branded around Pride to be exploitive in any way. Mm-hmm. So we really knew that we wanted to donate.
I mean, that would have been really terrible.
Well, true. But,
I mean,
you know,
I'm just saying. Like,
we wanted to be transparent.
Good intentions.
And we didn't want it to be something like, you know, we're going to donate 5% of the profits, you know? So it was really important to us that we were going to donate all of our profit from this.
So 100%.
100% of our profit.
But now you're brewing, we haven't really discussed this, so you're brewing a specific beer.
So actually what it is a rebrand of our regular Brau Pils. So we package it differently for Pride, and you know, we do a big launch around it that week. Mm-hmm. And usually we basically brew about the past 2 years we brewed 60 barrels worth of beer.
Okay. For people not in the beer industry, is
so
that a lot
that
of beer?
That translates to about 1,200 cases.
Okay, that sounds like a lot.
It is. And well, the first year when we were planning it, it was like 200 or 300 cases, and then we started telling people that we were going to do this beer and we were going to be donating all the profits, and it was going to be going to the Blade Foundation as well as Smile, and the interest in the city really took on a life of its own, and a lot of people
were hearing about the beer. I mean, DC, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, anybody at this table, but the DC community is incredibly, especially the beer community, the restaurant community, the industry in general is very progressive and wants to help out. I mean, they're the most generous people.
Absolutely.
So I would imagine if you told them this is what you were doing, they'd be like, "Yeah, send some my way."
Yeah, I would agree.
And that was evidenced by the fact that we needed more of it. So that first year, we actually ran out of our regular Pilsner for a couple weeks because we packaged it all as Pride Pils.
Okay.
And that was great. And then, so the next year we planned to do the same amount, and then we realized very quickly that we needed to double it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we are this year.
Right.
And we would like to brew more, but we can't afford to donate anymore. This is like the max we can brew and give away. But we're really proud to do it. And just being in the room today and listening to the stories and the things that people are talking about and the work that Smile does, it gets me invigorated again. And to listen to Stephen talk about reporters using synonyms. And,
I know.
And imagining that moment where you put your real name on an article for the first time. I mean, I couldn't be more proud to do this project for the third year and hopefully for many more years to come. And
now, you've made so far, how much have you donated so far?
So far, we've donated 23,700, something like that.
Hey!
23,750. And this year we're going to well surpass the 30,000 mark
by a
good amount. Last year we donated, I believe, around 16,000 maybe. And so we're hoping to do that again this year.
Amazing.
One of the things about the product is it doesn't ask anything from our retail partners or our restaurant partners.
No,
just
it's
that
all
they bring it in and sell it.
Right.
We take care of all the donation on our end, and just having the beer for sale, just having the beer offered that week is enough. It's all we ask.
Well, is there any sort of education? Like, if I pick up this can, I mean, this can really spells it out, but the Marsha P. Johnson one, is there something on the can that says, go here for more, learn more here? Is there something that allows people to learn more?
So we actually have bought pridepils.com, which redirects to the Blade's website that we use to promote the contest. But also right now it redirects to the announcement of the can design, what it means, gives some history. And we actually produced a little minute-long video that we put on there and also social media.
I was just going to say, you know, like those videos you can do on cans now? That would be so great.
It's very similar.
Okay, very cool.
So we wanted to create a video this year to explain who Marsha was, because I think I'm 31 now, and I didn't know who Marsha was being part of the community. And so I think it was great for this can to be able to tell her story and a little history with the 50th anniversary of Stonewall, just because I think there's a lot of people within the community that don't realize what Stonewall meant and what Marsha meant.
No, absolutely. Well, I think, you know, what the museum is doing is so important because, as you said earlier in the show, the press didn't really cover it.
Right, yeah. And I know, at least for me, I'm an older millennial and I still wasn't really told about this history in high school or anything like that.
No, I mean, it's not it's not like in our history books, you know? So it's not a part of our common education yet.
Mm-hmm.
So having exhibits like this, having the cans with this historical moment, I think really provides context to people. Yes.
Something about a can of beer, and I guess you would have this with a bottle too, but really with a can, because the design goes all the way around.
Sure.
You know, it gives a great billboard or just a great opportunity for somebody to really take in what is on the can. And, you know, we always look for ways that we can educate or be of assistance in our beliefs and our thought process. And mm-hmm. our very first can, the public, you know, we had facts about DC statehood on the back, mm-hmm. And a link to DC Vote. So there has always been sort of an idea with us of what we can do with the can and how we can take that medium, because it's a very personal thing.
No, it's
your megaphone.
You're
putting something in somebody's hand,
right?
And they have to take notice of it because they're looking at it every time they take a drink.
No, absolutely.
So it seemed like for us, this was a really natural, you know, progression to take with it, and especially mm-hmm. when pairing with the Blade Foundation.
Now, with the Blade Foundation, we haven't really talked about what you all do. What does the Blade Foundation do?
Yeah, so the Blade Foundation was originally created to digitize the archives of the Blade and make it available to the public. Mm-hmm. Being 50 years old, there was...
A lot.
Yeah, and the internet wasn't around. When Frank Kameny, who was the first LGBT person to be fired from the federal government, passed away, his estate had basically almost the whole history of the Blade and filled in what we were missing in our...
You mean he had every issue?
He had a lot of them. And so when they went to his house, they found all these issues of the Blade and actually filled in the holes and gaps that we were missing.
I literally have chills. That's so amazing.
Yeah. And so we partnered 3 years ago with DC Public Library, and they're actually digitizing the whole archives for us.
Mm-hmm.
And will be unveiled later this year with the 50th anniversary. So the whole public will be able to view every single issue from the Blade from 1969 to current. But since that work...
You know, I just have to say for the record that it just occurred to me, because... It's 50 years, 50 years. I turned 50 last week. But, like, I just didn't put it all together.
Happy
like,
birthday.
All of a sudden, I'm like, oh, right. Because I'm 50. Right. Okay, sorry.
No.
Back to you.
But since the digitization work was sort of underway and being done by DC Public Library, that sort of shifted what the focus of the foundation was.
Mm-hmm.
So a few years ago, we got our first grant, which funded enterprise journalism projects around the globe. But mainly our international news editor has been traveling around the world covering LGBT issues in areas that don't have media sources or mm-hmm. specifically LGBT media sources. So he's been to Cuba, Colombia, Mexico, Brazil, and he now has about 6 or 7 reporters that are in those countries that write for us on a weekly basis, reporting on issues in those countries.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he was actually headed to Cuba last week and is now banned from Cuba because of his work.
Got a badge of honor already. That was quick.
I know. And then this year with the 50th...
Wait, go back. Why was he banned?
Because of his coverage of LGBT issues in Cuba.
Oh, in Cuba.
So they canceled their LGBT Pride March. That was this weekend. The government, it was sanctioned by the government, and the government decided to cancel it.
Why? I mean, was there a reason? No, they can do whatever they want.
And so he was flying down there for that, landed, and they said, you are on a list. They pulled him aside. They took his phone.
God, that must have been so scary.
And then they put him on a plane back to Miami.
Okay.
But now he is in Colombia right now, working on some stories down there.
Well, I think, Christy, you can really talk to this. I mean, journalists put themselves in danger every single day. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The kinds of things that mm-hmm. happen.
Whether you're doing, like, a mundane thing, like reporting on the weather, or you are putting yourself in a place where you are potentially dangerous because you're getting information out that, you know, authoritarian government wants to keep in. Like, mm-hmm. absolutely, journalists are risking their lives every day to shed light and truth on a subject.
So it's so great that the Blade is able to create this space for journalists to get out there and really get the word out on issues that may not be covered by mainstream media.
Yeah, and part of with the 50th anniversary is we're going to be launching scholarships this year to go to LGBT journalists or kids that are in college that want to be journalists.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think today is more important than ever to sort of train the next wave of journalists in the country and around the world.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay, Maggie, let's go back to you. Let's talk about some of the design that you did, because we know Marsha P. Johnson is on the can, but there's so much else going on, and it's really bright and really beautiful. So tell us what you did and how it's all inspired.
Yeah, thanks so much. So So obviously Marsha is kind of the centerpiece of the design, but one of the things that Marsha used to do was she would decorate her hair with flowers that she found. There was a while during a time in her life where she was sleeping in like the flower district of, I'm not sure the proper name, but she was basically, you know, taking discarded flowers and putting them in her hair. So I wanted to obviously incorporate flowers into the design. So again, kind of just researching and looking through, I came across a organization in Canada called the Pansy Project. And that project is led by a guy named Paul Harfleet. And Paul's been really great because I tagged him when the design got announced and he was so excited to see his his project represented. But basically Paul goes around and he plants a pansy at the site of a murder that was occurred because someone was based due to homophobia and transphobia. So on the can you'll see, and I'm gonna mess the number up, I think it's 27. There's 27 on the can. Okay. And it commemorates the 27 people who have been killed in 2018 and into 2019 when the can was designed.
So these are all hate crime?
All represent within the U.S.
Okay.
And unfortunately, since the can was approved and finalized, there was an additional murder right in the D.C. area, right on the border. And so that flower is added onto the T-shirts, which are available online, which are, I guess these guys can talk more about that. But so it was really, I was really not happy, but it's great to be able to bring this into, something that's still relevant today. Not just, obviously Marsha is wonderful and she's still relevant today, but also using this as a platform to show, to commemorate people and lives that have been, continue to be lost. The other elements, Marsha's holding like a wine glass of calla lilies, so that's kind of just a symbol, a call out to the O'Keeffe paintings of, powerful womanhood. And the gladiolas on the side are, I think, just doing some research, I saw, Morrissey used to have gladiolas in his pocket to just go against the masculine norms. And so those kind of two elements are just little asides. But I think for me, the big thing are the pansies that really.
No, it's really, a lot of that's meaning. Very powerful.
Yeah.
Is that what you, do you guys think that's what, why people chose this particular one for the winner?
I think that that's definitely part of it. I think part of it is just it's very striking. It's a very beautiful design.
But now, I didn't know the story of the pansies, and really heartbreaking.
The symbolism in it really takes it up to another level.
But, without a doubt.
But I think also just upon first viewing at it, it's so gorgeous, and it really draws your eye. But the symbolism is another level.
Yes.
And also, another powerful part about the design is having Marsha on the design. Mm-hmm. Like we were talking about, a lot of people don't even know who she is. And there's such a movement right now to really make sure that people like her who are really at the forefront of social change for the LGBT community are not forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Knowing your history is so, we should all know our history. But if you are part of the community, you should know your history and you should know who was there at the beginning to get it off the ground.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and particularly when so many people, like queer women of color, are forgotten. Like, you see so many images about Stonewall and the history of LGBT community, and it's just like, blonde white guys.
Right.
And that's not who was really at the forefront a lot of these movements.
Well, and isn't that what's happening, what you guys are really showcasing as well at the museum in your exhibit?
Yeah, we were trying to show, just how diverse this movement really was, making people visible who were once invisible. Words. And I'm not even drinking a beer.
No.
Just making sure that, everybody who walks through can see somebody and identify with them and be like, oh my God, I feel kinship to this person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think everybody would agree here. It's great. We're also excited to bring visibility to Marsha, but I think you guys are work Smile's doing so that it's more than about just being about visibility. It's about, tangible action that I'm really excited that Smile is one of the beneficiaries, because I think the work they're doing is bringing this message to life in the real world. So that's really exciting to us.
Well, we're going to wrap up the show, but this has been incredibly interesting. First, tell everybody how they can support Smile.
Sure. So we have a number of different ways, from volunteering to donating. You can find out more about us at smile.org, and it's smyal.org. Mm-hmm. But however you are interested in contributing to empowering LGBTQ youth, we're interested in working with you.
Excellent. And schools can get in touch with you, programs like that. People can get in touch so that they can create their own programs.
That's right.
Excellent. Okay. And Maggie, how can people find you and all the great work you do?
Yeah. So if you look up Doherty Creative, it's Doherty creative.com.
So that way it's spelled like
yes,
it sounds.
Phonetically spelled. Yeah.
Hey, not to harp on that
yeah.
again, but you know what I mean.
Exactly.
Okay, great. All right, Mr. Brandon.
Hey.
So tell us, so we haven't really discussed the beer, like the
yeah.
Pilsner, like, so can we just get into that just a little bit for
sure,
the beer geeks out there?
Sure, it's the best Pilsner that's ever been made.
Duh. I mean, that goes without saying.
It does have 93 points on Beer Advocate, so
okay.
it's an amazing beer.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I want to tell you where you can get it during
yes.
Pride. So that whole week, it will be all throughout town. So
okay, so wait, you say all week, but when you look at Capital Pride online, it's just from the, what did we say? It's from the 6th to the 9th, right?
So we launch it the week of.
Right.
And then it's basically around for about a week.
Okay, cool.
So I would say...
Get yours.
Get it. Yeah, so I want to give a shout out to Whole Foods because they always support this program big time. They
mm-hmm.
have a big 100K stack right at the P Street Whole Foods entrance when you
Fabulous.
Come in. But they'll all have it, as well as all the independent retailers around town.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you'll find it at tons of bars and restaurants that week. So
excellent.
You can know that if you're buying Pride Pills, this is the product you're supporting.
Excellent. And at the Blade, what are you guys doing for Pride Week?
We have a ton going on for Pride. But
right.
I'll plug a few URLs so people can find out about the beer.
Figure
you can go to pridepills.com.
Mm-hmm.
This year, people have always wanted the T-shirts DC Brow has made from the can.
Oh, right.
So I partnered with a company called Breaking Tea,
mm-hmm.
And they are producing two cans, one with Marsha and then one with the pansies
Ooh.
On it. And the
those are fabulous.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. part of the profits are going to go back to the Blade Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get those at breakingtea.com/pride.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a ton going on in Pride, so go to washingblade.com and you can read us and find out what's going on.
Excellent. Okay, and the museum, mm-hmm. how long is that exhibit up for?
So it's running through the calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are at Pride as well, the festival that happens on Pennsylvania Ave right in front of the museum.
Right.
So we'll have different activities for people to do and then come in and take a look at the exhibit.
Excellent. Well, mm-hmm. I want to thank all of you for joining me in the studio today. This was really an incredible conversation. The artwork is glorious. Smile is doing amazing things. The Blade and DC Brow has come together to do something really good for the LGBTQ community, but for the community in general, because everybody gets to drink the beer too. And obviously, the exhibit at the museum is incredible. And if you hadn't had an opportunity to go to the museum, I highly, highly recommend it, because there's really no museum experience like it in the city. And I say that as somebody who goes quite often. So I want to thank you all for joining me in studio today. And I want to thank the listening audience for tuning in. You can, of course, download this on iTunes. You can go to the website, thelistareyouwanna.com, and find out more. And next week, we're going to be sort of back to like our usual here. We're going to be doing whiskey, like whiskey every way possible. Brandon, you want to come back in for that? We have the team from Jack Rose coming in. They're opening up two new properties, and they have the largest whiskey selection in the DC area, and we're going to be tasting all of it. So this is Nikki Nellis, Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast at the Line Hotel. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a delicious week.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.